The 0-2 pitch, swing and a miss, knocked him out. The Philadelphia Phillies are 2008 World Champions of Baseball.
It's Wednesday, December 16th, 2015. Welcome to the Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable, brought to you by shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. I'm Bill Furman. I'll be your host tonight, along with my partner, Jim Chesko. And, Chet, we've seen it many times. It's not necessarily how you start the season, but how you finish. The Eagles are playing a little better each week, but so are the Redskins and the Giants. It's going to be a battle to the end.
Yeah, it sure looks that way, Bill. And who would have thunk it after that horrible three-game losing streak in November, especially the Thanksgiving Day massacre in Detroit that left the Birds 4-7. Now, all of a sudden, we have an Eagles team that's won two in a row and is suddenly in the driver's seat to win the division with victories over Washington and the Giants in weeks 16 and 17. It is a strange NFL season.
It is, because, you know, if you look at the schedule, the games you thought they would win, they've lost, and the games you thought they'd lost, they won. It's definitely a mystery with this bunch.
Oh, yeah.
Well, we're going to do something different on tonight's show, and for our listeners, we're going to have our first great debate episode. But before we do that, I wanted to thank our loyal listeners, Jeff, for the great feedback we got on the Vince Papale show from last Wednesday. It seems the listeners really enjoyed Vince as much as we did.
Yeah, one of my favorite shows of all the ones we've ever done, Bill, of old number 83, he was terrific, even better than I expected. And he gave us a tremendous 10-5, never missing a beat. So, yeah, Vince did a great job, and I think he had a lot of fun, too. So that's important.
Absolutely. Well, hey, Chet, it's Eagles, you know, and as I always say, all wins are good wins, but 23-20 win Sunday over the Bills, it wasn't pretty necessarily, but it was effective. It put them where they need to be.
Yeah, and although I did pick them to win that one, and by the way, we both nearly nailed the score. We'll talk about that later. My head was telling me that it was a game that they were destined to lose after the shocking win up in New England and with the revenge-minded Shady McCoy back in town. Fortunately, though, for the Eagles, the Bills seemed to be even more dysfunctional than the Birds. 15 penalties really hurt them, and the Eagles did escape with a 3-point win. Yes, we will take it, 6-7, and as I said, in the driver's seat to win that division and make the playoffs.
Yeah, you know, there were some bright spots, and one certainly is Sam Bradford. He played real well. He only threw the one interception, which was that crazy call that we'll talk about a little bit later on, too, the interception that hit the ground. But I thought they played okay. I thought there for a while they weren't going to be capable of stopping the Bills. But in the second half, the defense slowed Shady down a little bit when he wasn't getting penalties. You know, when the Bills weren't getting penalties, they're bringing some of his nice runs back. And they shot themselves in the foot. But the defense played much better in the second half.
Yeah, they really did. And as you said, they did hold Shady in check in the second half. They were hurt by penalties, the Bills, as we both mentioned. But overall, they did what they had to do to win. And, you know, as you said, any win is a good win. And so they did get it. And we'll talk about Bradford some more in a little bit. But I thought he did play pretty well. I mean, he's still not throwing for a whole lot of yards. But he's looking better as a quarterback. He seems to be more confident back there. He did have the one interception that probably wasn't really an interception. I'm still not sure what a catch is, what a catch isn't, but it sure looked like that interception taken away from Celek hit the ground. But we'll let him slide on that. And other than that, I thought Bradford played well. He had that one silly sack that he took in the closing minutes that we would have all been complaining about all week if the Birds had lost that game. It was a sack on third down that he should not have taken, cost them a lot of yards, but it didn't hurt them in the end. So they escaped with a 3-point win and, you know, bring on Arizona.
Yeah, what did you think about the running back situation? You know, this DeMarco Murray thing is just really – it's kind of taken on a life of its own as his playing time just keeps dwindling, and the other guys are playing well. So, I mean, I guess it is what it is. You got a $50 million guy with $18 million guaranteed, and he's essentially running third to fourth team right now. It's really kind of crazy.
Yeah, I mean, we talked last week. There was a possibility. There were some murmurs that he might even be inactive this past week, but he did play. Pretty much split the playing time and the carries with Sproles and with the returning Ryan Matthews. It's going to be a real off-season drama, I think. They're not going to cut him, I don't think, because it would be too big a cap hit. From what I understand, in addition to his salary, I mean, it would be an even bigger cap hit, something like $13 million against the cap if they were to let him go. So I don't think they're going to eat that money. They're going to hope that he'll come back stronger next year. And, you know, maybe they'll be able to work things out a little better in terms of the offensive line and, you know, drawing up plays for him. Hopefully Chip and company will figure out how to more effectively use DeMarco Murray. I don't think he's going anywhere, at least not in this offseason. So there's going to be a lot of drama between now and next summer, you know, the whole Bradford thing. But, yeah, the running backs as well. So I'm curious to see how it's all going to play out.
Yeah, and the other thing that had me really concerned early on in that game is it looked like Sammy Watkins was going to have a field day. Maxwell was chasing him around. He was about five steps behind him most of the time early in the game, and they kind of corrected that a little bit. You know, Tyrod Taylor, he's a borderline. He's a bottom half NFL quarterback, I think. But Sammy Watkins, he was getting loose a little bit. And we'll talk about that a little bit more because of the receivers and the quarterback they're going to see this week. But, you know, what was your take on Maxwell? I know you're not really all over him.
I thought he played okay. He wasn't great, but he did what he had to do for the most part. He's not having those glaring mistakes that he had earlier in the season, at least. So, yeah, that's a positive thing. The other guy, though, that's really coming on, I think, in recent weeks is Eric Rowe. You know, he looked so bad a few weeks ago when he got thrust in there. But he's looked pretty good the last couple of weeks, and the Eagles, you know, won both of those games. So, you know, he's a rookie. He's a young guy, but he's certainly learning a lot because they need him. They need him to play with the injury to Nolan Carroll. So I'm really liking what I'm seeing out of Eric Rowe back in the secondary.
Well, one real bright spot, I think, at least one real positive who also came up with a couple negatives later, but it was great to see Aguilar break free and get deep and Bradford hit him right on the money. It was great to see that. He came back a little later, dropped a couple balls that he needed to catch, but great to see a deep threat and, you know, good to see Aguilar contribute.
Yeah, I'm with Ray Didinger on this one. I think Aguilar is a good player. He's just, you know, still a rookie. Maybe a little slower to develop than we would have hoped. We kind of thought he might have a great rookie season, contend for rookie of the year. That's not happening. But, you know, maybe part of that was because he was injured early in the season, missed a couple of games. Good to see him go deep and Bradford hit him. Nice to see the touchdown. But I got to tell you, Aguilar needs to work on his celebration because that was kind of a bad celebration. He didn't really know what to do. It was first time in the end zone. He didn't know how to celebrate.
All right. Well, hey, you know, talking about Rowe and talking about Maxwell, and the Cardinals are coming to town. This is a really solid offensive football team. They're 11-2. They've got Larry Fitzgerald, who's just fantastic. 96 catches, 1,088 yards. They have John Brown with 55 catches, 895 yards. Michael Floyd, 40 catches, 652 yards. You know, Carson Palmer's thrown for over 4,000 yards already, 31 touchdowns. But then they have Chris Johnson, who's run for 814 yards. This defense is – and they've won seven games in a row. This defense is going to have their hands full this week.
Yeah, I was just looking at their statistics before we went on the air. Carson Palmer has a QB rating of 107.2. As you said, he's thrown for over 4,000 yards. He's got those 31 touchdowns, just 9 interceptions. So that's a pretty good ratio right there. And, yeah, a lot of offensive weapons, as you mentioned. Boy, Larry Fitzgerald, he seems like he's been around forever, but 96 catches, clearly he is still going strong. And the Eagles do remember that John Brown fellow from past meetings. So, you know, they're averaging 31 points a game, too, which is second in the league, averaging 417 yards per game. That is first in the league. So the Eagles D is going to have their work cut out for them. We're going to talk about our predictions later on, but, boy, this is going to be a tough one for the Birds. I know it's a home game, but Arizona is red hot and still trying to, you know, assure a home field playoff game and a week off, I should say, a first round bye. So the Cardinals want this game, and they're going to give the Eagles a whole lot to handle.
They are. And you know what kind of I think it's lost in this offensive fireworks of the Cardinals is they have given up 252 points in relation to the Eagles, who have given up 322 points. So the number I like to look at a lot of times is the points scored versus points against differential. And the Cardinals are a plus 153. They've scored 153 more points than they've given up, while the Eagles are a minus 21. That's not a good stat.
Some quick math. That means the Cardinals are averaging winning by about 12 points or so, which is pretty impressive. Yeah, this is going to be a real test for the Eagles. The good thing is the Birds don't really need this game. You know, we talked about the fact that the Eagles can win the division still with wins in weeks 16 and 17 over the Redskins and Giants. So they don't really need this game, the Eagles, but you'd sure like to see them win it and get on a real roll heading into the playoffs, we hope.
Yeah, well, the thing that I think we all have to keep in mind is, you know, the Eagles are playing a really tough Arizona team. The Giants are playing the undefeated Carolina Panthers, but the Redskins are playing the Bills. And that's a winnable game for the Redskins, as we saw the Bills play last week. We don't need to go into Washington down a game, because then that Washington win becomes a must-win, and so is the Giants, obviously. They have to win out. Then all the crazy tiebreakers come into play and all that stuff. So this is still an important game, even though it's probably not as much of a must-win because the Redskins could still lose to the Bills.
Yeah. Boy, it's going to be tough for the Eagles, but I would love to see them pull off this upset. And I'd love to see the Giants and Redskins lose, too, because you don't want to have to rely on needing wins your final 2 weeks. You'd like to get a little bit of help from the other guys in the division. So I don't think the Giants are going to win against Carolina, but that Bills-Redskins game is certainly going to be very interesting.
Yeah, it is. And you know, the other thing, too, is, and of course, once you get into these division games, who knows, you know, but while we're playing the Giants on the final week of the season, the Redskins are playing the Cowboys in a game that the Redskins should probably win, but the Cowboys certainly could upset them, and I think with the patchwork they have put together. But, you know, if that's really a game Washington should be able to win, so, you know, they're not going to go away.
No, and I never would have thought that going into the season. I would, you know, would have pretty much guessed the Redskins would be the fourth place team in this division. Of course, nobody knew Tony Romo was going to miss three quarters of the season with a couple of injuries. Nobody knew what to expect from the Eagles, but we all thought they'd be contending at least. The Giants, you just didn't know, but you figured they're better than the Redskins. So the Skins are clearly the surprise team in that division, and the fact that they're still talking about maybe winning it, in fact, they're in first place right now based on all the tiebreakers and everything, that's a surprise to me.
Yeah, me too. Well, hey, as we mentioned earlier, we're going to do something a little different tonight that we're calling the Great Debate. And, you know, for our listeners, what we've done is we've come up with a handful of topics that we're going to debate. We agreed on the topics, but we don't know what each other's stance is on these topics. So we may agree or we may disagree. Most likely, we're probably going to disagree, but we'll see. And at the end, we'll hit each other with one mystery topic. So let's see how this goes.
Yeah, I'm all about trying new things, well, other than cauliflower, which I'm just not going to try. But, yeah, let's see what happens with our great sports debate here.
All right, hey, I'm not painting my face either for the game. All right.
Where do we start,
go.
Bill?
Topic number one. This one's for you, my friend. You start this off, and I'll follow you up, okay, until we get this thing rolling, okay? First topic is Sam Bradford. Are you prepared to go all in and sign Bradford, say, for 5 years, $80 million or so as the Eagles' long-term quarterback?
Well, if we can take Chip at his word, and some may question whether that is the case, Sam is his quarterback, and Chip wants him back next season. He said he didn't trade for him just to get him here for this year. So if they do re-sign him, it'll be interesting to see if he continues to progress in this system. I mean, we can't deny it. He has gotten better as the season has gone on. His confidence is up, it seems. His throws are more accurate. The interceptions are down. And he's even been going deep a little bit more often of late. There was the opening play to Cooper that they ultimately said wasn't a catch. Then there was the bomb to Aguilar. So that was good to see. Bradford is 6-2 in games he started and finished this season. Don't forget, that was after that 0-2 start, and then you take out the Miami game when he was hurt. But other than that, 6-2 in the last 8 games that he has started and finished. Now, would I rather have Marcus Mariota or Andrew Luck? Of course, but that's not going to happen. We're not going to get either of those guys. And yes, I have changed my tune on Bradford a bit over the past couple of weeks. He's looking better, as I said. I can't deny it. And there aren't a whole lot of other options right now. So let's keep him here. Let's see what happens with a third-year Jordan Matthews, a better in his second year, we hope, Nelson Aguilar, maybe a free agent addition, maybe a better Josh Huff in 2016. I don't think a trade for Colin Kaepernick is going to happen. And even if you were to draft a quarterback, it won't be a first-round guy who can step in and play right away. So, Sam, show us what you got. I know they're probably going to have to overpay to keep him here, but I think Chip is accurate when he says that Sam is his guy. I think Bradford will be back. Let's see what happens.
Well, I'll tell you what. It's funny, Chip, because you flip-flopped on me. I never thought you would go here. Because I was going to say, I think they're going to keep him. I think they're going to sign him. For a lot of the reasons you just said, I think there aren't a whole lot of other options out there. I agree they're not going to get Kaepernick. If they bring in a rookie, that's a whole process. That takes time in lumps as it goes along. I just don't see – there's so many other needs. You can't use a first-round draft pick, I don't think, here. You've got to find linemen. You got to find some linebackers. They just need so much help that unless you had a bona fide, RG3 was a bona fide and he didn't cut it. So who are you going to get to run this offense the way it is? And I don't see who that is. So I'm going to say Sam Bradford is going to stay. I think they're going to pay him an awful, awful lot of money.
It's funny what a couple of weeks difference makes. I mean, if we had this discussion, this debate 2 weeks ago, I would have said, get rid of Bradford. It's not going to work out. And, here we are talking now after a couple of decent wins, impressive wins, if you want to say the New England game, certainly. We're talking about keeping Bradford and being okay with it. I heard, I guess it was Tim McManus on 97.5 today saying, his agent's probably going to ask for Alex Smith kind of money. Alex Smith right now has a 4-year, $68 million deal. So, that's, $19 million a year, something like that? You said 5 years, $80 million perhaps. That's $16 million. They're going to have to pay a lot of money. I mean, there's going to be a couple other suitors out there perhaps. Cleveland's always looking for a quarterback, it seems. Houston, under Bill O'Brien, may want to, consider going after a Sam Bradford. So we shall see. Now, these next 3 weeks, and, maybe a playoff game or two, are going to be huge in this whole debate. If Bradford leads the team into the playoffs and maybe he steals a playoff win or two, boy, he could be a very wealthy quarterback next year. On the other hand, if he falters over the next few weeks and the Eagles don't make the playoffs, we could be having a totally different discussion.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong. I'm not in love with the guy. I just, with everything else going on around him, I just don't know that they can afford to cut him loose, try to find somebody to fit in, because now you'll be in year four of the 5-year Chip Kelly plan. You can't be starting over with a rookie quarterback or some scrap heap kind of guy. They have a scrap heap guy sitting behind Bradford that they could use if they were going to go that way.
So it sounds like we both agree that Bradford probably will be back, and it's what they should do. We're not overly excited about it, but they should do it and keep Bradford, right?
Yeah, that's what we're saying. And as I said, you surprised me because that you were going to go with this.
Well, I'm all about surprising people, Bill. Now, let's go to topic number two. We talked about this. The Eagles maybe finish the regular season 8-8, but they make the playoffs. But then they lose in the first round. So if that happens, if they finish 8-8, make the playoffs, but lose the opening playoff game, is the season a success or not?
Absolutely not. Not even a question about it. And the reason I say that, the East is just a joke, basically. So 8-8, losing the games the way they lost them is what makes the season not a success for me. Even if they end up 9-7 and they play well here at the end, they just were horrible too many times. You know, just getting shellacked by a very average Tampa team, getting shellacked by a bad Detroit Lions team. Now, with that said, they've circled the wagons here, and they seem to be playing better. We'll see how they finish. But, no, to me, no way. Injuries certainly played a lot of part in it, but everybody's injured. The whole running back debacle is a debacle. The line is average at best. The receivers haven't contributed. The inside linebackers that we thought we had so much, not been any good. If it wasn't for Jordan Hicks, they'd probably get an F. You know, Connor Barwin, I don't know what's happened to him. He's disappeared. Graham can't play. No, not a success. Darren Sproles is a man, though.
Oh, yeah. And my take is, well, if they miss the playoffs or get eliminated in the first round, you can't possibly look at the season as a success. Remember, it was Chip himself who said the 10-6 seasons of 2013 and 2014 weren't good enough. So he made moves that he thought would take them further, I guess, but it hasn't worked out that way, at least not immediately. Now, maybe things will be drastically different in a positive way next year, but for now, no. A 500 record or 7-9 or 9-7, coupled with a quick playoff exit, will not be a successful season. Now, if they surprise us all and not only sneak into the playoffs but have a deep playoff run, then we're talking a different story. We're saying, hey, they finished the regular season strong. They went to the NFC Championship game. I'm dreaming here. But if that were to happen, then we're saying, yeah, it took a while, but it finally kicked in, and it ended up being a successful season, and they're poised for even better things in 2016. But I don't think anybody is really expecting that to happen, so we're more likely going to see what we talked about. Maybe a playoff team, but probably a fairly quick elimination. So, no, not a successful season. We agree on that one again, Bill.
Well, I said one thing I'll throw out there, though. As we said in the open, you know, it's how you finish. And as we saw with the Giants, as much as I hate to bring them up, but, you know, and I've said this before, and all the Eagle fans want to make fun of me, but I like Tom Coughlin, and I like him because twice he's taken very average football teams with good defenses. He's prepared them at the end of the year. They won their way into the playoffs. And once you get to the dance, you know, you have a chance. And he has managed to win two Super Bowls with anywhere near the best teams. So, you know, there's still a chance you can get there. There's still a chance you can get into the playoffs. And obviously, then it becomes successful if you can win a couple games. But let's see how this all plays out. And then we can probably finalize this. Now, if they come out and they lose two out of the next three, obviously it wasn't so good.
Yeah, one of those Tom Coughlin teams was 9-7 and a fifth or sixth playoff seed, and they won the Super Bowl. So, yeah, that's a success when something like that happens.
Yeah, I think both of his Super Bowls were wild card teams, I believe.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yep, I think you're right.
So, and you know, it's again, I like seeing Tom Coughlin throwing stuff on the sidelines too. But just the fact that he was able to get, you know, in my mind, the average teams, they look better than average teams, certainly not the best teams in the playoffs, and get them ready at the end of the season to make playoff runs. That's tough to do as a coach, bring it all together here at the end.
Yes, sir.
Okay, good stuff. All right, now we've got topic number three. We'll get one more in before we get to our trivia question, okay? And this one is going to be a little bit of fun, I think. We're going to switch over to baseball. We're going to talk about Mr. Pete Rose. He's again been rejected in his effort to have his Hall of Fame ban lifted and to allow him to become eligible for the Baseball Hall of Fame. Right or wrong, Mr. Jesko?
I have very mixed feelings about this situation, Bill. I'm a little perplexed. Pete bet on baseball while managing the Reds, a clear rules violation, and he hasn't always been upfront about all of that since the initial investigation and whatnot. So, if pressed, I would say it was probably the correct decision to extend the ban, even though I wouldn't be upset if it went the other way. But here's part two of the equation. The guy belongs in the Hall of Fame. There is no evidence that he placed bets during his playing days. He was one of the faces of the sport in the 60s and 70s. He played the game at full throttle every single day and every single at-bat. And, of course, he's the sport's all-time hits leader. As I understand it, his ban from working in baseball or being associated with the team in any way doesn't preclude him from going into the Hall of Fame if the Hall were to relent. Now, the Hall of Fame is a museum that celebrates the sport's very best, and Pete absolutely belongs in the Hall of Fame. So ban him from being associated with working in baseball or whatever, but put the guy in the Hall of Fame while he's still alive.
Well, to this, I think we will disagree, Mr. Chesko.
Okay.
And I am as big a Pete Rose fan as will come down the road. For all the reasons you just said. Love the way he played. Played hard every day. Certainly, we would not have a 1980 World Series without Pete Rose. But Pete Rose knew what he was doing. And as you walk into every locker room, you know, down at the Lakeland Tigers level, the Clearwater Phillies level, you walk into every single locker room in baseball, and there's a sign right inside the door of the rules. And gambling is on that sign. He has seen that since, 1961 or something, when he came into the minor leagues, and 1963 when he was in the big leagues. It's about the uniform. It doesn't matter if he was playing or if he was managing. He was putting on the uniform, and he was betting against baseball, betting on baseball. He was in a uniform betting on the ponies and the dogs, which everybody knew he always did. He wouldn't have a problem. But he bet on baseball, and the fact that he didn't bet on the Reds to win or lose, I guess, well, those were the nights he didn't bet, and because he knew who might be pitching or something like that. And then the fact that he lied throughout, you know, I think I would go more the other way. I wouldn't let him be recognized in baseball Hall of Fame, but I would let him participate and let him be honored by the crowd. And that, again, that certainly doesn't take away with what he did on the field. He was just absolutely phenomenal.
It's just funny to me that, you know, Pete Rose, the all-time hits leader, is being denied entrance to the Hall of Fame. Barry Bonds, the all-time home run king, is not going to get in anytime soon. Roger Clemens, maybe the best pitcher ever, not going to get in the Hall of Fame anywhere. It's just kind of bizarre that, you know, three of the best players and guys whose numbers are just amazing are not being inducted into the Hall of Fame that celebrates these kind of accomplishments. It's just strange.
Well, but, you know, I guess it's like anything else. If, you know, if you go out and drive 80 miles an hour and a cop catches you, you're going to get penalized. You know, it's just,
of course,
it's just the way it is. You broke the rules, and you knowingly did it. I'd certainly like to see him there because I like the ball player, but he just broke the rules. I don't know what to do about it.
Well, I would just like to see him get in while he's still alive and, you know, able to enjoy it.
Well, and I think this was it. I don't, you know, he's 73, I believe, 72, 73 years old.
74, I think.
74.
I thought 74,
and
but yeah, whatever. He's getting up there.
Yeah, you have a new commissioner, so you had hopefully had a set of fresh ears. This was it. I think this is it. There's no more chances. The story isn't going to change three more years from now than it is today. I think this was it for Pete getting in.
Yep, you're probably right, but I'm hoping that it changes at some point.
Well, I would be okay if it did, but if I had to vote, I just don't think that I would vote for him. And I like him. I have his jersey hanging in my office.
He'd have my vote.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, hey, we will disagree to that one, okay?
Yeah.
All right, let's get our trivia time to the first correct answer, winning an autographed black and white 8x10 photo of Phillies Hall of Famer Jim Bunning getting his last out of his perfect game back in 1964 at Shea Stadium, courtesy of Carl's Cards and Collectibles. The first person that calls in and correctly answers our trivia question. Our shopforkisses.org phone line to answer the trivia question, 929-477-2855. And Chet, you've seen this question. Does it get any easier than this if you're an Eagles fan, or is it confusing to you?
I do not think this is an easy one, to be honest. I saw the answer, but if you asked me, I don't know if I would have gotten it right.
Oh, okay. Well, good. We'll make people work for this Hall of Fame picture this time. How's that sound?
All right.
Okay. Here we go. In 2015, which Eagles player has caught the longest pass from scrimmage? In 2015, which Eagles player has caught the longest pass from scrimmage? All right? Think about that.
All right.
Take our break, catch our breath, Chet, and thank our sponsor, ShopForKisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. By logging on to www.ShopForKisses.org's website, you become connected to over 3,000 stores, including all the big ones you already shop at. Every purchase made gets you cash back, and each purchase benefits the Kisses for Kyle Foundation, which helps dealing with childhood cancer throughout the Delaware Valley. If you have any questions, contact Bob Sullivan at bobsullivan.shopcom@gmail.com or give him a call at 484-319-8043. All right, Chet, you caught up on your breath now? You ready to go on to the next topic and see what we got?
I am ready, so let's do it, Bill. Sports Illustrated this week named its 2015 Sports Person of the Year, and it is, there's my drum roll, Serena Williams. Now, three more Grand Slam titles and a pretty darn impressive year by Serena, all in all. Is Serena Williams the best choice, Bill?
Well, you know, I thought a lot about this, Chet, and you know, one of the big thoughts was about American Pharoah being one. And you know, I look back and I actually said something that was wrong that I found out once I did a little research. Secretariat did not win the Sports Illustrated Sports Person of the World, and in 1973, Jackie Stewart, the auto racing driver, won it. The year Secretariat won. And in 1977, when Seattle Slew won the Triple Crown, Steve Coffin, the jockey, won it. But Steve Coffin was not riding Seattle Slew, interesting enough.
Oh,
the very
wow.
next year, Affirm won it, and Jack Nicklaus won. Excuse me, Jack Nicklaus won the Sportsman of the Year. And Steve Coffin rode Affirm. So that was kind of odd. Mm-hmm. Either way, the horse did not win any of them.
Okay.
So, what it made me think was this. What is actually the criteria for winning this award? If you look at the list of winners, some look like they're teams, some look like they're individuals for career achievements, and some look like they're for single-year achievements. So, what do you do? How do you decide? And if you're going to look at it that way, I think Serena certainly deserves it. But then you look at somebody like Jordan Spieth, who was ridiculous in 2015 on the golf tour as just a youngster. That was the first name that came to my mind, along with American Pharoah. So I guess I'm going to say it's okay, but is it for a year or is it for a career?
Well, a little bit of both. My opinion, it is a great choice, Bill. Serena Williams is 34, which is ancient for a tennis player. She came up short in her bid for the calendar year slam, but she did win the year's first three majors, and her record for the year was 53-3. The Sixers lose three games every week. Serena now has 21 career Grand Slam singles titles, just one short of Steffi Graf's open era record. She had an amazing year, and I am fine with it. Now, the other major contenders, as you mentioned, Jordan Spieth, a definite consideration. Steph Curry, another great candidate for sure. He led the Golden State Warriors to the NBA title last June, and his team picked up right where they left off then this fall, opening the season with 24 straight wins. And Curry, by the way, set a record last year with 286 three-pointers. Pretty impressive, until you consider that he's on a pace this season for more than 400 trays. that guy is on fire, a great player, and another, you know, guy who you could certainly consider. And then there is the horse, American Pharoah, that you mentioned, the first horse racing Triple Crown winner in 37 years. Pretty darn impressive. But, hey, even SI itself states that the Sports Person of the Year award goes to the athlete or team whose performance that year embodies the spirit of sportsmanship and achievement. So explain to me how American Pharoah displayed sportsmanship. You can't. And besides, I'd much rather look at Serena and her legs in a throne on the Sports Illustrated cover than American Pharoah. So
well,
there
you know,
go.
And I'm with you. But, you know, I also look back at single season accomplishments. And we had Miguel Cabrera just a year or so ago win baseball's Triple Crown that hadn't been won since 1967. And he did not win the award for his single year accomplishment. Maybe he wasn't a sportsman.
Ah, who won it last year? Do you remember?
Madison Bumgarner.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And he was the NLCS MVP, the World Series MVP, and it gave him his third World Series championship.
There you go.
So, you know, so that's career oriented. And the year before that was Peyton Manning, which was based on his career accomplishments as well. So,
yep.
You know, it's. I think that kind of is where Serena gets her break, where Jordan Spieth is 22 years old. As you said, Serena is older, and her career has certainly been spectacular.
Another thing that played in Serena's favor this year, she went back and played at Indian Wells, where she had the problem in, I guess, 2001 or 2002 when she was much younger. She finally made her return there, made peace with everything there. So I think that worked in her favor, especially on the sportsmanship end. So, yeah, Serena Williams, SI's choice, and I'm definitely okay with it.
Okay, let's go mystery topic, Chet. And I think we will disagree on this, and I hope we do. But here's where I'm going with this. Instant replay. Instant replay or the officials need to go away. It needs to go away until you can figure out how to get it right. When you look at last Sunday's interception of Sam Bradford's pass to Brent Celek, where the ball clearly hit the ground in review, and they still didn't get it right. A couple weeks ago in the Tampa Bay game, even though it went in the Eagles' favor, that's really not any of the point here. The Tampa Bay, on the play early in the game where the Eagles fumbled, the Tampa Bay player picked it up and then he fumbled it, the Tampa Bay player not only had both knees down, he had an elbow down. And they reversed the call and said he wasn't down. You can't do that. And then you turn around and you look at a college game where a referee throws an offsides on a kickoff that no one was offside by 2 yards, and it's not a reviewable play. So instead of Clemson having one last chance to drive down at midfield and win the game because they recovered the onside kick or tied the game, they weren't given the chance. So what are the rules? Can you why can't they get it right? Second of all, if you're going to use it all the time, not just when the rules suit yourself. And third off, the referees have to be more accountable for stinking a place up. And the fact that coaches have to use challenges and be penalized because the refs stink, that stinks. I say fix it or get rid of it.
I say fix it. You got to have instant replay in this day and age. There's just so much riding on it. People care about sports so much now, you need to get the calls right. Does it need fixing? Absolutely. Some of the examples you cited, you know, clearly are reasons why it needs to be fixed. Chip Kelly was asked about it, I guess, on Monday, you know, some of those instances in the Sunday game where they weren't sure if it was a catch or not. They asked Chip if he knows when it's a catch. Now he says, no, I have no idea. And you don't. And they have these expert former officials on the broadcasts on CBS and Fox. And a lot of times they'll bring those guys in before the call is made, and they'll say, yeah, it's got to go this way. And then the official on the field will announce it the complete opposite way. So nobody seems to know exactly what a catch is. They mess up a lot of other calls as well. But on the other hand, they're getting more of the calls right than in the days when we didn't have instant replay. So does it need fixing? Does it need revising? Does it need something to make it more precise? Yeah, I guess so. But you still have to have instant replay because you want to get as many of the calls right as you possibly can. So fix it, but keep it.
Well, I guess the other problem I have is you review all touchdowns, but you don't review the call that got tackled on the 2-yard line the play before the touchdown that might have been an awful call or a missed call.
Oh, I agree, yeah.
But because it wasn't a touchdown, and the touchdown, you're going to review whether the guy reached his hands over the line with the ball. You're going to review that, but not the one where the ball bounced while he caught it. I just don't get it.
And maybe that's one of the things that could be revised. You know, any kind of a play, near the goal line where it's like inside the 5 and did he step in or not, maybe they should all be reviewed as well automatically. So there are things they can do to make it better, and hopefully they're going to take a look at it in the off season because there have been a lot of complaints this year and justified complaints.
Oh, yeah. It's been bad. It's been bad every week. Every week. It doesn't matter what game you're watching. We're just talking about football, you know. I mean, there's other sports, too, that it's terrible.
Yep. Hey, I was going to have us debate, as my mystery topic, by the way, I was going to have us debate the fact that baseball's two major leagues continue to have different approaches to the use of the designated hitter. I'm not a fan of the DH, but we're going to save that for another time, okay? Maybe baseball season we'll revisit that one. I'm going to pull a last-minute audible here. And I'm going to blatantly steal the topic that Comcast Sportsnet Philly Sports Talk ran with today because it is a great one. And that is, which Philly rookie are you most excited about right now? The Sixers, Jahlil Okafor, the Eagles, Jordan Hicks, the Flyers, Shane Gostisbehere, or the Phillies, Mikel Franco? Bill, what say you?
Well, as we're sitting here today, Shane Gostisbehere is pretty darn good. And I saw a post on Facebook that was going back and forth last night and through today. I was involved in it a little bit. And, you know, someone made the comparison to Mark Howell. You know, and this kid's only played, 10-15 games. He's got 6 goals. And we're already starting to throw Mark Howell's name at him. I think the kid has a chance, you know, to be really special. And make everybody else around him better. And that's where I'm not quite so sure yet about Okafor. He's going to be a great player. Is he going to be the kind of guy that can be, you know, a perennial all-star? I think that remains to be seen. Franco, I'm a little on the edge with him because I saw the year before where he wasn't very good. I watched him last year in spring training when he was demoted. But then he came back and he had a great regular season, for the last half of the season. So the jury's still out, you know, for me on him. And Jordan Hicks, you know, I think we just have to see more of him. He gets an incomplete in my book. He played, you know, a handful of games, and, you know, the experts all felt like he was drafted a little too high. So, you know, let's see a little more on him. So I'm going to go with Gostisbehere.
I love what Hicks gave the Eagles before his unfortunate injury. Franco does have loads of potential and should be fun to watch. Okafor has lots of talent offensively, but he's not a great defender or rebounder. And frankly, even though the guy can score, he's not all that exciting to watch. He's a low post player. Not all that exciting, to be honest. So for me, it's absolutely the Ghost. Shane Gostisbehere has re-energized the orange and black. I mean, can you believe it, Bill, that it was just a month ago that he was called up from the Phantoms? November 14th is when they promoted him. So he's played 15 games since then and already has 6 goals and 5 assists. That is good for 5th on the team in scoring, even though he's played less than half their games. And, of course, he has 3 game-winning overtime goals already. And, oh, yeah, he's a defenseman. You said Mark Howell. I'm saying this. The defense still needs work, but offensively, he's looking like Bobby Orr or Paul Coffey so far. I love watching this kid, and Shane Gostisbehere is definitely my choice as the most exciting Philadelphia rookie right now.
I have to agree, and hopefully, the thing I like is the way he's playing with guys like Giroux and and Voracek and those guys, and everybody just seems to be getting better.
Yeah, look at what he's doing for Giroux and Voracek's assist totals. I mean, they've assisted on all of his goals, I think. So that's nice to see, the way they're working together. I know he's only been here a month, but boy, what a difference in the team since he's come up. The Flyers are suddenly, you know, knocking on the playoff door and just looking like a much better team. And they can actually, you know, win some games in overtime now. You always got scared before when the game would go to overtime, but now they got a real threat out there in Shane Gostisbehere. So, and hey, here's another thing. He's made me watch hockey in November and December. So there you go.
Hey, there you go. Absolutely. Hey, good stuff. Good question. And by the way, what was the was that the same answer that everybody else came up with today?
Yeah, I think the vote on Philly Sports Talk, the last time I saw it, was 52% for Shane Gostisbehere. Okafor, a distant second at 20%, and then the other two guys were like 15-17%. So Shane Gostisbehere is definitely exciting the Philly fans.
Very good. Good stuff, Chet. Good topics tonight. Kind of fun to do. A little different than we've done in the past. And good stuff.
That was fun. Yeah, let's do it again another time. That was fun.
All right. Well, hey, I think we have a caller if they're hanging in there. Let's see if we have a trivia answer. Hello, welcome to the show. Who we have?
Hello, fellas. How y'all doing?
Good.
Is this Danny from the deathbed?
It is.
He's calling from his hospital bed.
I am
calling from the hospital bed.
What a guy! What a trooper!
We were just getting ready to wish you well because one of your pools actually won this week, and I didn't want to bother you because I knew you had surgery. And sure enough, right from the hospital bed, Chet, there's first for everything here at Philly Press Talk Radio.
This guy is a serious guy. What a diehard. You are something else, Danny Bevins.
I love you guys. I love the show. I couldn't miss it.
We appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Yes, we do.
I really didn't plan on I wasn't going to call in. I just was going to listen and enjoy the show. But when you asked that trivia question, I knew the answer. I had it.
Who is it?
It was one of two guys, and I'm guessing a little bit in a way, but it's either Selleck or Cooper, and I think it was Riley Cooper.
Bill, tell them the news.
It was Riley Cooper.
Riley Cooper with
a 62-yard catch against the Washington Redskins on October the 4th of this year.
Okay.
So,
cool.
Danny,
you are good, Danny.
Another one for the collection.
Yeah, absolutely. My wall is filling up.
Yes, it is.
I hear you. You know what?
I'm going to have to admonish the rest of the callers for letting a little short, fat, aging white guy beat him from the hospital bed. They should have been calling in on this one.
That's right. You know, I would have. Well, two things about that, Danny. One is you have to be old enough to know who Jim Bunning was.
That's true.
You know, and I thought our buddy Fred Hugo, who's the hugest Riley Cooper fan I know, would have just been all over this because he knows all about Cooper.
Right.
All right, Danny. Well, hey, get yourself well and get back healthy and back out of that hospital pretty quick.
Absolutely, I will. One quick thing. That team that won, I have to give credit to my son-in-law. He's playing that one.
Aha.
Okay.
That was not me. I can't take the credit for that. It was my son-in-law, Sean. So, but I am still.
Buy him a pizza. Buy him a pizza.
Buy him a pizza.
Yep.
Same time.
Oh, don't make me laugh. It hurts.
All right.
Well, thanks, fellas. Yes, sir.
All right.
Take care.
Well, Chet, hey, that leads us right into our winner of the Philly Press Box Radio Pick and Pull for a week. And I added that as Danny, but I didn't know it was Sean because it's under one of Danny's names. But, you know, again, we wanted to wish Danny well. We had that down to make sure we did that. And he just needs to be aware, though, that the big dogs are chasing him right now. And, you know, Chet, we're 14 weeks into the season. We allow 1 week to be dropped, which totals 194 games. And believe it or not, we have two guys that are actually tied. after 194 games that could be picked. Danny and Terry House both have 128 wins. They're tied for first. You, Chet, and Jimmy Wilson are just two games back. Carl Henderson has slipped a little bit. He's three back. And Ed Chambers is still in striking distance at five games back. So it's going to go all the way down to the wire here.
Yep, I'm one of those big dogs who's loving this. Now, and while I wish Danny well in his recovery, I'm also secretly hoping that he's still a little groggy from his ordeal when he makes his picks this week, if you know what I mean.
I hear you. Well, you know, he has been pretty darn consistent all the way through, and that's why he stayed at the top so far. But we'll see. And I do have to tell you, I watched the game, the Eagles game with Ed Chambers the other day, and he was in agony as he was
having his worst week
of the season, and he was in agony as he watched his both of his pools shrinking. So he wasn't real happy about that.
Yep, I'm sure.
All right, well, hey, Chet, Christmas, as we know, is coming. It's right around the corner now. No better place to pick up a piece of Philadelphia sports memorabilia, autographs, or sports cards in the Delaware Valley than our friend Carl Henderson at Carl's Cards and Collectibles. If you name it, there's a good chance that Carl has it or has access to it. So if you're out of the area, Carl will ship for you no matter where you are. Of course, time's getting close now, so you better make up your mind and make it happen. But stop by Carl's Cards and Collectibles at 22 West Eagle Road in Havertown, PA, at 19083, if you're going to put it into your GPS. Or give Carl a call at 610-789-4996. Or you can also visit his website, carlscards.com, or contact him on Twitter at carlscards. And, Chet, you know, we talked some about Carl getting his signing dates lined up, and he's got some cool things that he's added this week. And, of course, December the 24th at the store from noon to 3, the big man himself, Santa Claus, is going to be in the store. So be sure to stop by and get the picture taken with Santa Claus and pick up your last-minute Philadelphia sports memorabilia. As far as the signings, current Eagles wide receiver Josh Huff will be in the store on December the 28th. And just added, Chet, our guest from last week, the Invincible, Vince Papale, will be in the store January the 8th. I'm already figuring out how I'm going to get how and what I'm getting from that signing. January 9th, that's right. And Eagles Hall of Famers Pete Retzlaff and Maxie Bond will be in the store January the 16th. So he's got a lot of things already lined up for the first half of January. It's going to be really good. Great autographs to get for Eagles fans again. Stop by at Carl's Cards and Collectibles, 22 West Eagle Road in Havertown, or give Carl a call at 610-789-4996. Well, Chet, hey, we looked smart last week with our predictions. I don't know how we managed to do it. I think you picked 24-20 Eagles, and I picked 21-20 Eagles with a game-winning field goal. So not bad for a couple old guys for a 23-20 finish. So let's see how smart we are this week as the 11-2 Arizona Cardinals roll in for Sunday Night Football. Time's yours.
Kind of bizarre, Bill, that this game means almost nothing to the Eagles in terms of their playoff hopes. As we said earlier, even if they lose, they're the division champs if they beat the Redskins and Giants the following 2 weeks. Of course, it'd be nice to get this win and, you know, get some help so they don't even have to win that last game against the Giants, but I don't see that happening. Of course, I'd like to see the Eagles, you know, come out and play great Sunday night, continue to gain confidence, steal a win from the 11-2 Cardinals. But I just don't see it. Carson Palmer's playing great. The Cardinals have so many weapons, Larry Fitzgerald and beyond. They can put up a lot of points, as we said, 31 a game, and they're still playing for a first-round playoff bye. And, I mean, let's face facts, they are a better team. Hope I'm wrong, but my prediction, Cardinals 31, Eagles 17.
Well, I'm gonna go with you on this for most of the same reasons. I'm gonna throw one caveat in there. If Darren Sproles does what Darren Sproles has been doing and scores some sort of special teams touchdown, or they manage to score some points the odd way like they did at New England, but I don't see a whole lot of that happening. I'm going to go Cardinals 34, Eagles 21.
So about the same. We see a 13 or 14 point win for the Cardinals.
Yeah, and here's what I don't like about this, Chet. Same thing that we saw. I don't want to see the same thing that happened last year when Aaron Rodgers torched the Eagles, and after that game got on tape, everybody torched the Eagles. They need to play this game tough, and I just don't know that they have what it takes to stop these guys. But this, to me, even though, you know, as we're saying, the standings may not be that important to win this game, they need to play well. And I just hope they can, just not sure they can.
Yeah. Now, from what I understand from some of the experts this week, the one weakness the Cardinals have is the offensive line. So if they can get a lot of pressure, if, you know, Fletcher Cox and company and the linebackers can get a lot of pressure on Carson Palmer, maybe rattle him a bit, you know, maybe they have a chance, you know, halt the running game too. That's going to be the key. If you can win that line of scrimmage, you got a shot. But if that doesn't happen, I don't see the Eagles winning this game. So 31-17 Cardinals. You said 34-21 Cardinals.
Yeah. You know, and I thought that, too, about the offensive line, too. I looked at some stats and saw a 4,000-yard passer and an 814-yard rusher. I'm thinking somebody's doing something up front there.
You got it.
All right. Well, hey, we don't have a whole lot of time. Chet, do you have a quick parting shot?
Bill, we've seen a lot of coaching changes in Philly over the years. Since 1969, our Phillies have had 16 managers, and that doesn't even count a couple of brief interim managers like George Myatt. The Flyers have had 18 head coaches since 1969. The 76ers have had, believe it or not, 20. Yeah, 20. Our Eagles have had a little bit more stability, just 10 head coaches since 69. But across the state, the Pittsburgh Steelers have had exactly three head coaches in 47 seasons. Chuck Knoll was there for 23 seasons, earned 193 regular season wins. Bill Cowher guided them to 149 wins over the next 15 seasons. Mike Tomlin, now finishing up his ninth season, just picked up win number 90, making the Steelers the first franchise with three head coaches with 90 or more wins. They've all done well in the postseason, too. Four Steelers Super Bowl wins under Knoll, one apiece under Cowher and Tomlin. They sure know how to find the right guy for the job in Pittsburgh.
Well, and I think a lot of that has to, yeah, you're right, certainly good choices, but the Rooneys have kept the ship afloat, because if you remember when we were just little kids, before Chuck Knoll came in, like, I believe it was probably about 1969, I want to say.
Yeah, 69.
The Steelers weren't very good.
Nope, horrible.
But once they got Chuck Knoll in and they got that ship headed in the right direction, they have been, probably the model franchise throughout the league.
Very few down years over the last 47.
Yep. Well, hey, I am going to, again, because we are going to run out of time, I'm going to skip my parting shot. But I promise that next week I'm going to get my Army-Navy story in there. But we just don't have the time to do it again tonight. So we're getting close to the end. Let's wrap it up. And as we get to here to the top of the hour, let's thank Carl's Cards and Collectibles for their continuing support of the show. Mary Flanagan, our marketing extraordinaire behind the scenes. Our sponsor, ShopForKisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. For Jim Chetchesco, this is Bill Furman. Hoping you enjoyed the show. And we'll join Philly Press Box Radio on Wednesday, December the 23rd at 7 p.m. with Bleeding Green Nation's Brandon Lee Gowton returning for his second trip to the Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable. Should be fun. Brandon's right on top of what's going on with the Eagles. You can listen to our Facebook page or on the Internet at www.blogtalkradio.com/Philly Press Box Radio. And now on both iTunes and Stitcher. High hopes, Philadelphia sports fans.